There are some things you wouldn't mind being stuck with, like a large unexpected inheritance. An always-on-the-verge-of-death phone that has to be plugged in just right so it charges is not one of those things. Switch to Verizon and we'll pay off your old phone, up to $800 via prepaid MasterCard, so you can get a new one. Just trade in any phone from our top brands on any unlimited plan. With new line on my plan. Additional terms apply for trade-in and pay off your phone offer. See Verizon.com for details.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Wrestling Art with Chris Things.
Do the hammer lock. I do the hammer lock. Do the hammer lock, you turkey necks. Yeah, do the hammer lock. I do the hammer lock.
All right. Everybody knows. Ladies and gentlemen, I think this is as good as the sound is going to get. Welcome to the show. Welcome to Wrestling Art with Chris Things. I am Chris Things Brian, wrestling art dude, and I'm here for another little old show. We've got our final return of the match of the week edition of the show. It's been a hot minute there. We've got some catching up to do, as always. We've got three matches of the week to talk about today, as happens, triple header edition. I guess that's just kind of the normal way we do things now, but whatever. I put so much effort into trying to get rid of the sounds of these fucking bugs in the background. The new place I live, we live in the hills, so I'm a hill person now, and we have these bugs that just, I don't know, man. I did previous episodes and just the bug noises were driving me nuts. I hope they didn't drive you guys too nuts. So we're recording in my kitchen. I've closed all of the windows. I think you're still probably going to hear some bug noises. Hopefully it's at the stage where it's not too annoying. And you're just like, Chris, you're nuts. I can't hear anything. But anyway.
Don't worry, Chris. I can confirm there is a lot of noise.
So welcome to the show, Ben. So you've got my cousin Ben up here visiting us for the first time. Your first time seeing the property up here in person. Welcome.
It is. Thank you, Christopher.
Here. Friend of the show, previous guest. We were just talking. I think your first one was on episode 2, maybe?
No, I reckon 3 or 4. It was Nakajima vs. Kenno.
Maybe one of those. You should probably get a bit closer to the microphone here, I think.
Okay, I'll switch up my seat.
Yeah.
With some sound effects.
Yeah. So we've heard you on quite a few times. Remember what your last episode was? It's been a hot minute.
Oh, I think it was a double header.
That sounds about right.
I think it was Danielson versus. Does this ASJ sound familiar, or was that print I was looking at?
I'm not sure. Hang on, I'm going to move the microphone a little bit too. Your spikes are lower than my spikes, so...
Okay, I'll come closer.
Alright, I think this is... Alright, we're back after Ben knocked the audio cable out, but...
I dispute those facts completely. I was growing my very yummy coffee. And I blame the other person.
All right, that's fair. So I think we're sounding okay. But yeah, so your first time coming up to visit here. We were up in the shed, my art shed, just before doing a little recapping. We rewatched the last three matches of the week. Got a little refresher. Your first time watching, so for everyone playing at home, our trio of matches, we start out with two Hechicero matches, that amazing match with Blue Panther from near the start of the year in Arena Mexico, the following night's match that he had against Zack Sabre Jr. in New Japan in San Jose, incredible, and then we go on to just a Lucha Libre classic in the form of Dr. Wagner Jr. versus Atlantis in a match that is very, very close to my heart. First time you ever watched it, but we'll get into that a little bit later. You are here for this, but this is the opening segment where I normally talk about all of the things. For you don't normally hear this part. This is the bit where I talk about all the things gone in the World of Chris things. So a quick little summary for everyone. So we had the art show last week. So as you would have heard, if you listened to last week's episode, I was kind of losing my mind. I was a rambling mess, just having had no sleep for the longest amount of time. But I finally got the show up there. We had the opening night. We had a little old wrestling club on the evening, and it was super nice. So I was very happy to get that through and done. We're already at the point now of having our next wrestling club this Sunday, in fact. So AEW's coming to town. We've got the big AEW Grand Slam show on Saturday night, which, Ben, you're coming along to as well. You haven't secured tickets yet.
No, I haven't secured a ticket yet, but that's the aim.
Yeah, I'm sure you'll be right. I don't think tickets are going to be too hard to get for...
It's just biting the bullet when you choose to buy.
They are very expensive tickets.
Reasonable seat, but yeah, all about timing.
Yeah. So I think that we'll probably be enduring a lot of wrestling on that show, and then we're turning it around for our little old what we're calling a Grand Slam hangover edition of Wrestling Club, where hopefully, you know, you'll our loyal club members and maybe a few strangers from interstate, we'll see how we go, come up, and we are gonna enjoy ourselves a little bit more wrestling. Maybe have a little chat about how the Grand Slam went, our thoughts, and...
A little show review.
Yeah, and we're also doing trivia, which I'm very excited about. We're going to have our return of trivia. Can't reveal too much about what it's going to be, but I think it's going to be a fun one. And yeah, I've got a very bunch of eclectic, weird and wonderful wrestling that I'm going to put together, play up on the big screen, and yeah. I think it's going to be a nice time, so I'm excited about that. This past week has been fun for me to sort of get back into all of the things of work. You know, for the last longest time, I've just been thinking everything about this art show. I've been going mad, just like making as much work as I possibly could do. Having, as I mentioned, very little sleep. But I got it done, I got it hung, and that was a nice feeling. And then now I get to return to, other stuff I have to do. So I've been getting back onto the things. I'm getting back into a little bit of commission work. I have, here's a fun one. I'm doing my first wrestling poster design in quite a few years. Back in the day, some of my early forays into the world of wrestling art, I guess, was doing the posters for our little wrestling company we used to have up here in Brisbane, Grindhouse Wrestling. We used to have in a little cinema with some burlesque and stuff, and yeah, I was pretty stoked of getting to do those posters, and I got to do, you know, probably for the duration of existence of the company, or at least when I was associated with it, so a good year and a half or more of doing those posters, and done a lot of weird fun kind of stuff for them, and I really enjoyed it. And you know, the promoter actually paid me, which was nice.
Were you wrestling still then, or
yeah, I was still doing the wrestling still
for them.
I was putting on the tights. I was both the graphic designer and wrestler at the same time.
What was the name?
Of what?
Of you. What were you wrestling on? Because it wasn't Chris Things.
I was Wild Joe.
Wild Joe. Still fucking wild. That hasn't changed.
It's kind of weird and nice to get back into doing wrestling poster design. I was super stoked. Sort of local group that's doing some cool stuff, approached me out of the blue and asked me if this might be a thing. And yeah, I'm quite delighted to get to do it. And yeah, doing it in a, it's been, you know, my commission process has changed quite a bit since the days of doing wrestling poster design. So yeah, I'm having fun with that. I'm finalizing that poster today, tomorrow. And yeah, I look forward to sharing that with you guys when it's all done and dusted. But yeah, it's been a fun thing. And trying to, you know, I think for me, wrestling posters, there's so many, especially independent wrestling posters, that are all the same. You know, they're all just like a bunch of topless dudes who are greased up and have long, greasy hair and beards and are looking angry, you know.
You had me until you said dudes.
And I just am like, man, can people not do something a bit different? And sometimes you see people do something a bit different, and I think it stands out, and it, you know, kind of, it catches more people's eyes by doing something a little bit different. So I'm bringing a bit of that. I'm bringing my kind of illustrative style to it. And yeah, we'll see. Touch. Yeah. So we'll see how we go, but it's pretty well me for the most part. I'm very excited, to, it's this badger running around with a ball. It wouldn't be a Chris Things podcast without a dog running. My badger.
Not a fan of being locked inside.
No.
The most fun that he had.
No, but,
she definitely prefers the dam over the inside of the house.
This dog is constantly in this water hole that we got here on the property. My gosh. But she's very lovable. It's okay. But I think that brings us to the end of our little opening segment. I look forward to meeting as many of you as possible for Wrestling Club. And then I'm on to Lucha Fantastica next weekend, where I'm going to be down in Melbourne, down your way.
She will be.
Staying on your couch.
Yep. Making yourself at home.
Yep.
Comfortable.
And
set up in the lounge room.
And setting up my little art table and hawking my wares to all of the Melbourne Lucha fans.
And making a living.
Yeah, yeah, attempting to.
I think you're doing very well now.
Oh, thank
you. Set up in the nice new place.
Yeah.
Plenty of space.
It is. I love that art shed. Makes me very happy to be able to make the things up there.
It's definitely very you.
Thank you. And I'll also endeavour to, I might see if I can bring some...
more of your art in there?
Yeah, maybe some of the fresh stuff. Maybe some of this Luchadors versus Aliens goodness to the people of Melbourne. We'll see how we go. But yeah, so if you're in Melbourne, you feel like you want to come along to a little Lucha Fiesta, they've got the Love Battle taking place on Saturday night when you'll hear this. I'm very looking forward to seeing everybody. It's been a hot minute since my last in-person event of that nature. It's that crazy December.
That was a crazy December.
But we made our way through.
We definitely did.
That sort of wraps things up here. Let's jump over to some match of the week goodness. Okay. Welcome back, Ben.
It's good to be back, Christopher. It is very good to be back.
So, as we said in the start, we got three tremendous matches to talk about. These, a lot of time when we do the match of the week, double header or triple header, sort of like the matches that come together have like an interesting kind of contrast to them. A lot of time they're just batshit opposite kind of thing. This time, I think it's interesting that we got three matches that all have something very much linking them together.
Yeah, I'd say that too.
They all feature luchadors.
Yeah, they do. Although the last one, which was my favourite, Atlantis versus Dr. Wagner, that was more your traditional big boys going at it, where the others were more technical, agile, a bit more craftsmanship on the mat. But
definitely a lot of Yave anytime we're talking about our boy Hechicero. But I mean, is that being said, the first match we're talking about here, Blue Panther against Hechicero, as we were saying, it did have a lot of like your real traditional lucha, you know, classic Rudo versus classic Technico, that real good guy versus bad guy thing, you know, the beautiful vulnerability of Blue Panther. And, you know, the crowd willing this old man on to do just some crazy, crazy things. Like, I thought that was very much sort of a classic big-time lucha match in its own sense.
It was also nice to see him back actually wrestling in the mask for that one-off match. It was a nice treat.
Yeah, maybe lean in a little bit closer to the mic there. Yeah, so the commission gave him special permission to don the mask again, which I was very happy about for the purposes of the illustration. It's always fun getting to draw Blue Panther's mask. And, I mean, talking about the illustration, I guess a big part of this match, for those of you all that have seen it, I mentioned sort of the vulnerability of Blue Panther, and I think that's the magic of it. And there's a moment in this match where Panther goes for a tope suicida, and I don't know what happened. I don't know if his knees or ankles clipped the rope.
First, wasn't it? His head hit the rope first, or the top rope.
Yeah.
And then his feet also hit it, and then he just nosedived.
He just went straight down. You had an arena full of people who thought they had just seen this middle-aged gentleman's death.
Early 60s.
he's an animal. And, to his credit, we were saying, Hechicero was just on that motherfucker right away, like, just working him over. Yeah. There was no moment of, like, you see so often in American wrestling of, like, oh, no, it's gone wrong, what do I do? You know, that deer in a headlights thing? Hechicero, experienced Rudo veteran, he knows what's up.
No, he worked with it. And he was, the way he went about it, it got you to almost forget about what had happened, and you were back on it. Nothing too physical, but enough to look like, made you forget about it and just move on to what he's going to do next and how he's going to make it work.
And accentuate the heat that he's got in that moment. You know, you have an arena full of people that were like, oh my gosh, is this old man dead? And so there's like a care factor for him, right? And he's just taking that and like twisting the knife, you know, and being just the classic Rudo in that moment where, he's just like eating shit and I'm going to try my best to kill this old man if he's not dead already, you know?
He definitely elevated it from heat to crazy heat of absolutely just going at it with a grate and just emphasizing it and showing and just going with it. From what the stuffed up spot, he almost used it and elevated the match to another level because he was able to draw on what had occurred instead of thinking, what the fuck do I do? This didn't go according to plan. But it was just, it's the difference between a guy who knows what he's doing in the ring to a guy who's fucking clueless who's following a script.
Yeah, and I think that's really the true magic of professional wrestling. You know, we were having a chat the other day about sort of like the magic, for me, a big part of it being sort of like the organic, you know, stuff that happens in the moment, you know, within wrestling, whether that's a promo, whether that's a match, you know, whatever it is, it's that sort of like jazz magic that happens in the moment. We're just reacting to something. And that's where, you know, a guy like a Terry Funk, you know, is just the best of all time for me. But a lot of those guys of that era, I was just watching a whole bunch of Buddy Rose, you know, another of the greatest of all time. You know, Nick Bockwinkel, these kind of guys, just like these guys that know exactly how to take a moment and just react to it in the moment and just elevate things. Yeah. And that's exactly what happened here. I think a lot of times people kind of watch wrestling in sort of like this eye, almost like they're watching an Olympic like ballet performance or
they want absolute perfection.
Yeah, it's like, all right, we got our cards ready. He didn't quite make where they catch their footing at the end? I don't know.
Yeah, well they did the big flippy move and they double jump to get their balance. It's like,
yeah, like you did a slight stumble on the finish and then we're taking away two stars. Yeah. And there's a lot of people approach wrestling like that.
Yeah.
Especially with everything everyone puts into, like, you know, the Meltzer star rating scale and that kind of stuff. And almost like people look for perfection that, like, there's no flubs, there's no, like, everything hits exactly right, like, there's everyone was in the exact position the whole time. And to me, that's not what wrestling's about. Like, it's about when, you know, it's stuff can go wrong. And this is an example of something clearly went wrong and it made it so much better in a magical way.
Yeah. They went with the imperfection that occurred and were able to elevate the match to a level that it may not necessarily have gone to if that spot actually didn't happen.
Yeah.
And that was the magic of it. It's like he saw it, he went in for the save, but then when he's all right, let's keep going, and then just took the Rudo to a new level. Then he played on it and went further and further where he went at the mask and just other classic moves that he knew how to play it to just get the crowd absolutely insane.
Yeah, and this was I think, during the third fall.
Yeah, it was all in the third fall.
And we had two. One of the other things I really love about this match is the how perfect a use of three falls it was.
Mm.
Which I think I'd say the same thing about the Wagner versus Atlantis match as well. Just two clinic examples of why two out of three falls is just the perfect amount of falls to me. I want to go back to a world of wrestling where every match is just two out of three falls.
If done correctly.
Well.
Because you can have two out of three falls. And as I saw recently, if they're done like shit, it does not elevate the match or give it that specialness. It just...
Well, you've got to be used to working the two out of three falls. Hmm. And that's the thing. Like, you watch any of these, like, legends from back in the day, you watch any, like, classic Luthes matches, and it's like, these are guys who've worked 1,000 two out of three falls matches. Same for, like, most of these, like, amazing CMLL luchadors. They've been their bread and butter. They've worked more two out of three falls matches than single falls matches, you know? So it's probably a bit unfair to hold others to that same standard where it might be, all right, I've maybe worked, you know, a dozen two out of three falls match in my entire career.
But it's still shit.
They've had the harsh critic, Ben.
It got my hope. It's like, I was willing to give them a chance because both teams, on paper, look great. And it just led to more and more disappointment. And the pain I had to go through to get to there made it all the more worse.
In case you're wondering, this is Ben, not a fan of the Motor City Machine Guns versus DIY match.
I do love the Motor City Machine Guns. They are smooth, one of the best tag teams in the world. And I had high hopes because of what I'd heard about DIY. I hadn't watched them myself. And it just was like the first fall. Perfect finish for a TV show, but for a live crowd with whatever 60,000 plus people to not actually see the intricacies that went into that first fin, that first fall, it was just wasted.
Fair.
Because how it worked, it's like perfect if you see it on TV where the commentators, they show you the replays and you see how it went down, but live, the only people who may see that are the people at ringside, and you got 60, whatever crowd number they gave us. As I saw the Twitter clip where he was announcing a crowd of 70,000 people, whatever it was, and then on the TV screen it said 65 or 67. It's like, that typifies wrestling promotion to a T. It's like...
Hey, if I hear an attendance number and it's actually correct, I get a little bit sad. To me, this is a wonderful carny world of wrestling where we always have to inflate the attendance. Like, are you familiar with the Japanese wrestling, like, no vacancy, super no vacancy kind of thing? They sadly don't do that anymore. But to me, no vacancy is no vacancy, right? The super no vacancy would just jammed, like, way more people than the fire marshal will allow in here.
No vacancy to me means... don't bother entering the building. It's packed to the rafters.
I love it. I love this carny ass world of wrestling. It wouldn't change a thing.
It was just perfected because he announced it as they popped a number on the screen. It was just two different. In though it's not delayed. It was literally as he was saying it, the numbers went below. It was like
so good.
Oh, that was the timing was just impeccable. I loved it.
But yeah, getting back to this one, the three falls I thought were perfect. Mm. You know, we had Hechicero catching him in, like, the first fall was more Yave kind of style stuff. Just some beautiful, you know, mat work and counters and just everything you would expect out of these two Yaveo masters. And so Hechicero caught him in that one. We then got, I love these second falls where it's like the Technico, you know, comeback. And it's just like, bam, 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 gotcha, you know. And then obviously everyone just loves to see, you know, Blue Panther getting the juke, and he's celebrating, the crowd's going nuts. And that was just fantastic. And then, yeah, we got into this just epic third fall, and the match was just a beautiful escalation from that point forward. Just some crazy stuff from Panther. He, you know, in addition to almost dying on this dive that we're talking about, he also actually hit some, you know, amazing bloody dives. Did some crazy stuff. He did the dive off the steps on the stage.
Well, he did it twice through the match. The fall didn't stop him. He got back up there and he did the cannonball off the ring apron onto Hechicero. And it's like, for a guy at his age to be still willing and able, especially after what had occurred earlier.
Mm.
It was like, nah, I'm going, no matter what.
Dude, I make no bones about it. Everyone knows Blue Panther is, like, one of my all-time favorite wrestlers, my favorite luchador. Like, this dude's insane. We're just talking about his insane longevity, you know, compared to a guy who of similar age, who's actually a little bit younger. We were talking about, you know, Keiji Muto. Yeah. And yet, comparing these two dudes, obviously they worked quite different styles over their careers. But seeing, you know... And I'm a big fan of old man Muto, you know, during... I even love that. I think we both love that Noah run.
It definitely disappointed. It's like it exceeded my expectations on what I'd seen in the previous few years before it occurred.
Mm.
And he was able to work within his limitations to have some great matches.
Mm.
They were different kinds of matches, but between him and Kaito, they had some...
Love those. He had a fantastic match against Masa Kitamiya, which I think flew under a lot of people's radar when Muto was GHC heavyweight champion and Masa was challenging for the belt. Some great stuff against Marufuji. I really loved that one when Marufuji won the belt off of him. Excellent little run, but at the same time, you watch that and you see a dude who's clearly in pain. You know, just the state of this man's knees, right? Yeah.
Like you can see, it's like his upper body, he looks like a Greek god. His lower body looks like he hasn't been able to friggin' walk for the last 20 years.
I mean, but he had doctors, I swear, that told him to retire in like the late 90s. So,
100%. But he was still able to find a way to make it work. He worked with the limitations he had and still was able to have some amazing matches.
Yeah.
For me, other people may disagree, but.
Tremendous. But I bring him up because you just have such a contrast between these two dudes. Muto, who clearly, you know, went to retire a couple of years ago now, and I think he actually wanted to go a bit longer, but he was eventually just like, man, I think now is just the time I have to do it. But it's still, you know, the longevity of getting to like your late fifties, early sixties is pretty insane.
Was it 60 or did he get
to? Something like that. We could probably do our research. Yeah. But yeah, like compare that to a dude who Panther, who said older than Muto.
Yeah, I think we found he was a couple years older.
And the way he's able to move, I think it's just a testament to the wonderful magic of lucha and the fact that, you know, you're probably not taking as many big hard bumps. Yeah. Like
it's very calculated in the way the bumps they take and how they take them, and
they get more out of them too in terms of crowd reaction.
They're not overdone, and it's the style he's worked, and it's just he doesn't look like his age.
Mm.
The way he still moves in the ring, it's just effortless for a guy. Like you think of most people in their early 60s, it's like moving very slow, and this guy's able to try and run from one side of the ring to the other, jump through two ropes that I don't know how he fits through, but he does because he's still big boy up top, got a bit of size about him, but he finds a way.
Yeah, it's magical. And that's the magic of Blue Panther, and I think that extends... We were talking about, like, the interesting mix of people in Arena Mexico, you know, of, like, your loyal hardcores there every week in those, like, you know, those early rows that probably had the same seat for, like, the last 20 years, you know, and comparing... that we have, obviously, a lot of tourist fans there as well, and that's the magic. It's that weird combination of them... And a guy like Blue Panther speaks to both in such a beautiful way. You know, when I was setting up the art show at Scratch the other week, I was talking to Boots, who, you know, wonderfully got me to do all this, like, lucha-themed thing for their big weekend of Tartness, and that was just part of the reason why I put the show up. But they went to Arena Mexico. Yeah. They went and visited, and they're probably the... biggest memorable part Boots was telling me was Blue Panther. And this comes from people who have you know, like they don't know that he's been this incredible Yave master for the past like 30 or more years. Mm. Like they're just dudes watching and they're like, man, this old man rocks.
The passion he can bring out of just any person.
Yeah.
They may have no interest in wrestling the slightest. But seeing going on a New Mexico show, seeing him in action and just the excitement, the joy that he's able to bring by the way he works.
That's the beauty of Panther. You know, he appeals to these different groups in such a great combining kind of way. And I especially think in this match, like, so much credit to Hechicero as well. Mm. You know, similar to their previous match last year that I love so much, officially my favorite match of 2024, might I say.
Ooh.
That was...
Didn't know that one.
Yeah, it's my most enjoyed match. I stopped saying best match, you know.
Yeah, I can...
I like to just more talk about the one that for me was the most enjoyable. Yeah. That's why I'm looking at wrestling these days. Yeah.
I thought you should look at it, to be honest.
Yeah, I think people maybe you'd remove a lot of the toxic kind of bullshit of the, you know, way people talk about wrestling all of the time. But yeah, I adored that match, and I thought this had the exact same kind of magic. Mm. And you know, obviously, I have a lot of love for Blue Panther, and we're singing his praises. But like, Hechicero is a dude who you know clearly has a lot of respect for Panther as well, but who knows how to, you know, be in the exact right place to get the most out of it. To
he just knows what to do, when to do it. Through, I guess, through repetition over years, he's worked it and just can read what he needs to do to elevate something to another level.
And being so great in terms of, like we're saying, reacting in the moment to stuff. And we saw that then going into the next match, the Hechicero against Zack Sabre Jr., which is the following night, which is insane.
That is
crazy. He went from working the big Friday night Arena Mexico main event to then going to, what did you say, San Jose?
San Jose, Battle of the Valley, what it was.
Yeah, the New Japan show in San Jose, the San Jose Civic Center, I believe.
Sounds familiar.
And then the following night just has another absolute classic against Zack Sabre Jr. Totally different match in some ways, because this was much more of like a classic, you know, non-stop Yaveo battle.
Well, it did get a bit of striking at the near the end.
They did. But again, and another rematch as well. So we got like two of the matches.
Is that the third time they've gone at it?
Well, if you count the PWG one back in the day,
I thought they did
that stretches before, out a bit. But yeah, they had the big, amazing CMLL one at Arena Coliseo last year. Then they had the one in Rev Pro.
I did not see that one myself.
That one wasn't quite as good. Still good, good, but not quite as good. And then they had this one. So I guess the third in their more recent series. But yeah, like just so... I think you see out of Hechicero, in some ways people could probably see him from his appearances in AEW or whatever, and just like, oh yeah, this is like the technical guy, you know, kind of thing. But you watch him in two matches like this, you see his complete ability to be great in so many different ways.
It's not just technical, it's just not just on a mat. The guy has a variety of things that can make him almost elevate the other person by the way he goes about it.
Yeah. Knows how to tell an absolutely beautiful story.
He's a big boy and also can strike. It's like, and he just knows how to beautifully pace the match from there, just working the style on the ground, him and ZSG going back and forth, and just slowly working into it, and then just bring it to a new level as they go along. And both of them, to me, are the two best in the world at doing that.
Yeah, I mean, I will straight up say my 2024 Wrestler of the Year, Hechicero, through and through. He's had, like, so many matches that I adore last year and then continues to do so this year. He's he's becoming the new American Dragon of my Match of the Week series, I think. Brad, I think it's time that I replace it from being the American Dragon Match of the Week to... It's the Hechicero thing now, but man, need
to broaden your horizons.
But it still blows my mind. You can have so totally different but equally amazing matches night after night like that.
No, I totally agree. It was two matches that had a lot of commonalities about them, but also two different ways they went about doing it.
Like, I definitely felt the Zach match was really that kind of similar to their previous one. It's just sort of like reactive, almost like free flowing jazz music kind of thing of you do this, all right, I'm going to do this, you know, and that sort of like.
The way they knew how to work with each other. They knew if he does this, I can do that. Nothing had to be said. It was just they knew what each other were going to do, and they knew how to play with it and make it work even better.
Yeah, and it felt like an evolution of the previous matches as well. Like, they're sort of like almost getting to that kind of RVD, Jerry Lynn kind of thing where you know one another so well. It's like, oh, I know he's going to do this, so then I'm going to do this, but then he counters that and do this. And so
it's
good.
Back and forth. It's pretty impressive to watch, and I can't wait to see what they have next in line.
Yeah. I mean, it's a real definition of, like, Yave style. Like, Yave, I think, translates sort of literally to kind of like key and lock. So it's like lock and key kind of wrestling. Yeah. So it's kind of like you can get that from watching a match like this, and you're like,
actually makes sense. I actually never knew what it actually meant, the term.
Yeah, I think a lot of people don't either. Yeah. I probably have Cubs fan to thanks for that. Pretty well all of my like lucha knowledge just comes from reading Cubs fan's lucha blog. It's a wonderful resource.
Oh yeah. And it actually makes complete sense when you break it down to what it actually meant.
Yeah. Yeah. But yeah, I absolutely adored that match. It's funny recording this now and looking back on that crazy run that Zach had. So this was when Zach was IWGP World Heavyweight Champion. And he's since just lost that strap to Goto, which we're both very happy about.
Yeah. More happy that Goto was finally able to win the strap, not that Zach actually lost.
That's a good thing to reiterate, because I was sad that Zach's reign came to an end, but that sadness was overwhelmed by how happy I was for Goto.
Yeah, to finally get that big win that they'd drawn out for like nearly 20 years.
Yeah, but looking back, this is just such a great run for Zach, I feel, and that match really, really showed, you know, like the best of both guys, I think.
Really, it actually made me very interested and excited to watch the big match for Goto and to see how Zach's final match champion goes for the first time.
Well, I find when someone's big title reign comes to an end and they know this is my last match as champion, they put someone over. Generally, I find the real greats make a special effort to make that match like the best one kind of thing. Like, they put even more effort into it because they know they have to almost like make the guy that they're passing the baton to deal.
Because it makes their title run actually mean more if the guy who takes it from them is actually goes to another level.
Mm.
And it sort of brings their title run to another level because the guy they've given it to is able to gets elevated and brought to a new standing.
I mean, that's the point. I mean, you see so much in wrestling of like the bullshit thing of like, oh, well, I better make sure this guy doesn't really get over so they know I was the fucking reason that this is good and then I can get that baton back as soon as possible. But,
well, there are a lot of fucksticks who do operate that way and will always will because their ego is too big to actually put that aside for the betterment of the company, not realizing what it actually means to put that next guy over.
I lovingly refer to it as the Triple H syndrome. Yeah,
it's the first person who comes to mind when you think about it. It's like, this guy truly gives no fuck about the guy he's losing the belt to and really doesn't want to lose the belt in the first
place.
Mixed
with a bit of Hogan. I reckon, you know, like, let's make sure this next guy is getting the belt, like the fucking, when you put over Ultimate Warrior, and it's like, all right, let's make sure I get all the attention for being the good guy, putting him over at the end rather than him actually, all right, this is a bit of a sidetrack here.
It can happen.
But yeah, man, I have a lot of respect for the dudes who it's like they just try to make the next guy in, and it's also it's like the most important part of their title reign in a way, because it's the end part. It's like the full stop, the exclamation point that you're putting on that run.
How people remember it.
Yeah,
it's like the important moment is to win it and what you do, but most people are going to remember how it ended, not just the beginning. And it's like if it ends on an even higher level, then they remember it as being a great run. At least that's the way I sort of...
Like, I'll never forget that amazing American Dragon Ring of Honor World Championship run. And because, you know, he had some incredible matches through that crazy extended run, like so many amazing defenses from like the Alex Shelley one to the incredible series with Roddy Strong, to even like amazing match against like Lance Storm that was like really, really good. So much great stuff. But the finish, I'll never forget the end of that run, because that was when he put over Homicide in the Manhattan Center. To, you know, Homicide was had such a crazy level of support, especially in New York that time. Like, he was just on fire. And that moment of Homicide finally winning the big one off of Danielson, of all people, you know, ending this, like, epic title reign was such a cool moment. And, you know, I put a lot of credit on that to Danielson. But, yeah, I think there's something real good about that.
He's the true opposite of Triple H. Completely selfless.
I'd say so. but man, so I think we hit on most things of that you know, Zach Cachacero match. There was you mentioned the strike exchange towards the end. Really cool series of like sliding kicks and really great strikes at the crowd, which is like each one they reacted more than the prior. It was like boom, 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 boom.
It just definitely drew the crowd in. It just took them to that extra level. And especially in that small kind of setting, it just made it even better.
Yeah.
It's
beautiful venue. Yeah. I want to give a lot of, you know, I think a great venue can elevate a match in a very special way. And I was saying how I think that that size, the capacity of this.
Size.
Yeah, it's probably like 2,000, maybe 2,500.
Nice.
But yeah, just such a crazy good atmosphere. And also, like, I think the interesting thing to mention is, so you watched it for the first time with the English language commentary, right? I watched it for the first time with the Japanese one. And I think the Japanese one, in addition to just like, I honestly prefer watching with Japanese commentary, because I was saying I just get to focus in on the actual wrestling a bit more and I get the enthusiasm. Yeah, but it doesn't distract me from watching it.
The excitement and enjoyment they portray through their commentary is by far and away a thousand times better than any English commentary.
Yeah. And like, I think the English language commentary serves a purpose, because there's a lot of people who just, for whatever reason, can't, you know, watch other language kind of stuff, and the English language brings a lot for them. So I think it's a good thing that they do it, but it's just not for me.
Yeah, it can give you some interesting information. Or it can drive you insane and want to make you punch yourself in the face by listening to these morons talk.
And also, you're saying that the actual audio quality on the English one, the mix was real shit, right?
The crowd doesn't seem as, like, just doesn't sound as good with the English commentary. That's the way I found it with the New Japan shows in America.
There are some things you wouldn't mind being stuck with, like a large unexpected inheritance. An always-on-the-verge-of-death phone that has to be plugged in just right so it charges is not one of those things. Switch to Verizon and we'll pay off your old phone. Up to $800 via prepaid MasterCard so you can get a new one. Just trade in any phone from our top brands on any unlimited plan. With new line on my plan. Additional terms apply for trade-in and pay off your phone offer. See Verizon.com for details.
The English commentary seems to take away from the crowd enthusiasm, noise. It just seems almost like it's the way the commentary is put in sort of like lowers the level, so it's just sort of, it just sounds weird.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's one of the things on this match where, actually, looking at all three of these matches, all three crowds were insanely crazy. Great. But this one was real special to me because you had a real interesting mix of sort of like, you had your American fans, you had, you know, Japanese fans, and you had a really good amount, it felt like, of, like, Latino lucha fans.
Really, the Shims have been in San Jose, close to the border, to a point, isn't it?
I think that's San Diego, isn't it?
Well, San Diego is definitely lower.
Yeah, I think San Jose is, like...
Or is it? San Diego's really hot.
I think so. You've got two Australians talking about American geography here. I thought it was sort of near, like, San Francisco, like, up there. I don't know. We're going to find out. We've got a Google Maps search about happening here. But yeah, I thought that the crowd mix was real great here. And you clearly had some people that were really there for Hitchicero, some people that were really there for Zach. So I thought that was so good and just felt like it really elevated the match as well. Especially compared to like the last one I watched was their Rev Pro match. And yeah, I couldn't say the same thing about the British fans. Oh, What do we got there?
My reception is close. Oh, yeah, you're right. Very close to San Francisco.
Yes.
You have definitely got better geography than me.
Because I remember thinking this wasn't far from, like, the Cow Palace, which is a very famous venue when New Japan ran their early shows over there.
The first, like, foray back in America, wasn't it?
Yeah, they did a really good crowd for the big Cow Palace show, actually, with the sweet Juice versus Jay White match.
Oh, they did too.
When Josh Barnett almost kicked Jay White's ass.
you got to love Josh.
Yes, absolutely. Lots of love for Josh Barnett. But that brings us to... Oh, I did want to make mention, so, yeah, for the illustrations, first one, I did the moment of the Blue Panther with that suicide dive that I thought was, you know, we talked about how much of an important moment that was. So I had a lot of fun doing that. You know, like I said, getting to do Blue Panther's mask. And also, like, having Kamenito in the background was a super fun little thing to add in there. And, yeah, it's like this moment where he's you know, everything's gone great right before, you know, everything goes not so great for him. Just a really cool moment. So I was really happy with that illustration. Then the next match was, like, it was just a moment early on. We were talking about, like, the moment that I picked for the illustration for the Zach versus Hechicero one where... it's just sort of like the early parts of the match where they're just sort of like getting the feeling out for one another, that sort of like face-off kind of like thing. And I try not to do that too often, you know, because I feel like if I do that for every match, it's just like, all right, it's just a series of face-offs. But sometimes I think it can really be a cool kind of thing just to capture the general vibe of thing. Yeah. And for this one, it was sort of like a bit from behind Zach. He's more in the foreground, and then like, Hechicero's in the background a little bit, but yeah, that was another really fun one to do, and yeah, I was quite happy with those ones. I think at least probably one, if not both, of these I did in the very early hours of the morning, as I generally do with these matches.
I have seen you in action at 1 o'clock in the morning, still working away as your plane has landed late at night.
Maybe that's when I'm most productive, 1 a.m. I don't know.
That wouldn't surprise me, to be honest. That wouldn't surprise me in the slightest.
But now we get to our third of the matches of the week. This being just... So I think I watched this in preparation and doing some research for this, like, All Lucha edition of the wrestling club.
The timing would work on from when you started talking about the match.
Yeah, and then I played it at Wrestling Club for the All Lucha edition, and man, so that was the second time I watched it, and I absolutely, like, adored it even more. And there's just so much to love about this match. Like, I think to me the biggest thing I love about it is, like, it's just perfect Rudo versus Technico. Like, you don't get a better Technico than Atlantis. He just feels so pure. But he's also, like, we're saying, one of the cool things, he's got that sort of like badass thing where it's like, you fuck with him, he's going to, like, get you back exactly how you fucked him over, you know?
And he knows how to do it, that the crowd are falling behind him when he's doing it, which is one of the hardest things to perfect as a technico.
Because
if you don't time it right, you completely fuck it.
Yeah.
And he did it at the perfect moment to just got the crowd completely behind him and fucking just went from there.
And, like, a real special magic to it as well, because, like, so much of wrestling these days, like, especially the technicos or whatever, it's just that the reaction is based off of the doing the most impressive sort of, like, high-flying maneuver or whatever. But a guy like Atlantis, I feel, had that connection in those fans' hearts, like, based off of more than doing cool moves.
Like, he definitely had some cool moves. But, yeah, he did not rely on them to get the crowd with him, behind him.
He's just a magical luchador all around. Like, and I can't say enough good things about Atlantis. Big, big fan of Atlantis Jr. now as well. And I still love watching Atlantis to this day. Like, talk about your older legends. Yeah, but then, like, also, man, so cool to get to see... Dr. Wagner Jr. in his real prime.
He's a beast.
I'm also a big fan of Dr. Wagner Jr., of course. Massive fan of Eodel Dr. Wagner Jr. as well, from his spectacular recent Noah run. But yeah, super cool to see the real prime of Wagner and this period of CMLL as well. That's the one that I fell in love with when I first started watching it. This was sort of the early 2000s era when you know, I heard that I loved La Parca in WCW.
I may have heard that once or twice.
And then I heard, oh, you know, La Parca's like wrestling in Mexico again. And this is when I was like downloading torrents back in the day. And on the torrent site, they used this, someone, I don't know who it was, if you know, if you're out there, thank you. Like, they would post every week's CMLL broadcast. I think this is when it used to air in like the lower states of America.
Oh, okay.
On Televisa Deportes, or I don't know what the thing is. But yeah, so I used to watch this like every week, and then I like just fell in love with it. And obviously, you know, I'm a big fan of LA Park and all the cool stuff he was doing there. But it was seeing the dudes like Ultimo Guerrero and like Dr. Wagner Jr., who I was like, these guys are just insanely cool and just the absolute best. So. And just the whole general vibes of this era as well. Like, the crowd is insane. Like, it just feels like a whole nother world.
Like, I'm not normally a big TV promo person, but the little promo of that little clip in the doctor's office beforehand.
We've got to talk about this.
It was like a little 40-second clip. It was just, like, perfect. It wasn't much, but it was just, you could see the pure hatred as he's opening up. The results from the test.
So for everyone at home, this match starts with maybe the best pre-tape that I've ever seen for a wrestling match, where Dr. Wagner Jr., for, I don't know the explanation for this, he is in full doctor get-up in his doctor's office. Yeah. I assume before the show he sees patients.
Yeah.
You know, I guess.
All makes sense.
I don't know. They come into the wrestling offices area of Arena Mexico for him to give him their exams. I don't know. So then his ultra over-the-top sexy nurse comes in, brings in some what appear to be scans.
Yeah.
He opens up these scans and then is outraged to find it's actually a picture of Atlantis. And he is very aggravated by this immediately.
It's like, I saw it going one way as you saw the nurse walk in and it went a completely different way and I loved it.
Just tremendous. Like, it made no sense in so many ways, but it was so campy and wonderful. It was just such a hit. That was also a thing that, like, got a great reception at Wrestling Club as well, for, like, a bunch of people watching this who probably not the most familiar with any of this, and they're just, like, it immediately connected, you know? Don't speak the language. It doesn't matter. Lucha language is universal.
And that's all you want. You want to be able to connect with the people you're putting the show on for.
Yeah.
And they did it perfectly.
And then from the get-go of this match too, like, Wagner has the epic entrance, you know, coming out to Bon Jovi's Bad Medicine, which to me got to be up there with, like, the coolest entrance theme vibes of all time, Wagner coming out to Bad Medicine.
That was pretty cool with the crowd going crazy, him in...
To this day, anytime I hear that song, like, I just think of Wagner, as I feel like everyone should. That level of association. But yeah, and then beautiful, amazing entrance. And then Atlantis is coming out. And of course, the dastardly Wagner, like, cuts him off, beats him down on the entrance before he's even got his entrance garb off. And it's just an immediate, like, pathway into, we know exactly who is the good guy, who is the bad guy. It's such a universal kind of thing. Just the consummate rudo Wagner is in this match.
And it's an easier way to draw the people who may not know the history between the two or anything about either wrestler. It's like they know good guy, bad guy.
Yeah.
A simple, straightforward move, and it shows you how it's going to play out over the match.
I think this is the perfect introduction to Lucha for a lot of people, because a lot of people think of Lucha as like, oh, it's the high-flying kind of spectacular stuff. But, I mean, you were saying it's had a total different feel.
Mm. Like, to me, it had the traditional Japanese feel of two big boys absolutely belting the crap out of each other.
Mm.
They took it, they go outside the ring, they go through the crowd. They just work the crowd to bring them into it and just elevate it by the way they draw the people in, the emotion they bring out of them by what they're they're showing what they're putting on.
Yeah, I mean, we were having a talk, yesterday about the whole bullshit of like in-ring wrestling versus storytelling. You know, that whole kind of like bullshit Twitter thing. It's like, you know, to me, great wrestling like is a great story that happens between the ropes. Like, you don't need all this other gaga stuff. You know, it's what happens in the ring. That's what you're telling the story. And this match is a perfect example of that.
Like, the other bullshit, as I like to call it sometimes, can elevate a match by making someone care more, but the true story is in the ring.
Yep.
And that's
and it doesn't have to be like two guys, all right, let's stop the match and do some like high school community theater like
production.
Let's do like a speaking like bit, stop the match and let's like, you know, make everything so overt, you know, it's like,
and so obvious. It's like it does not need to be that way. Even though a lot of people expect and say it has to be that way, that is not where it is at its heart. And it's, for me, it's best form. The story is told between two guys going at it in a ring and telling you the story, laying it out for you. Good guy, bad guy, fight to the end.
And if you do it right, like, everyone bites on it, regardless of your level of familiarity or, like, you know, if you're just coming at it. You know, I had people who watched this at Wrestling Club. This was like their first ever time having seen, I think there was a match earlier in the night that had Atlantis in it, but I think this was the first one with Dr. Wagner Jr. This is the first time I've ever seen him, and like immediately they got his vibe, you know, completely. And that's like such a success of a great wrestler for me, like someone whose whole thing you can convey like in, you know, whether it's the way he like preens to the crowd or
The way he carries himself, the way he interacts with the people.
Yeah.
And he had really loved that mask and the attire, the zebra.
The zebra print on this one looked badass. And I love how he changes it up. But you look at like Atlantis has his look down. He has not changed that look like, probably since the late 80s. It's so iconic.
So what? So that actually has, but he has had a different look, or is it actually his entire career?
Oh, Atlantis changed it up a little bit when he, I was telling you, when he went Rudo, when he was teaming with Ultimo Guerrero, who's part of Los Guerreros del Atlantida. He had like some sort of red variations on the mask.
So it was all red, or was
it
was all white, right?
I think sort of to match like Ultimo Guerrero's kind of gimmick a little bit. Or, you know, as he got older, he sort of like added the singlet kind of in there as well. But yeah, always just that iconic blue classic Atlantis mask, which I always absolutely adore. But both guys, so great visually, which was why it was such a treat to get to draw this match.
Yeah.
And man, I struggled for like the moment of what I was going to pick for this one. Cause the match is so great. You know, like we said, three falls that are just like all just so perfect, you know, similar, like the first fall in this one, just Wagner beating the piss out of Atlantis and then just like hitting him with a big like power bomb and pinning him straight up, right? And then we see Atlantis get the Duke with the beautiful Atlantida in the second fall. I think it was a quick turnaround on that one too. And then again, just an epic escalation into the third. Just absolutely perfect. Like, but yeah, so of all of that, I was like, what do I do for the moment? Because there were so many cool visuals, even like going back to the pre-tape segment with the nurse and shit. too, there were some great bits with like some of the holds that they were putting one another in. And then again, two absolutely iconic masks. But yeah, I ended up picking the moment where, again, we're talking about Atlantis being, you know, obviously he's like such a pure baby face, but to me, always the best kind of baby faces, like talking about your Ricky Steamboat kind of vibe, they're the ones where they can, you know, have the heel, you know, cheat against them all they want, and then they turn the tables, and then they do right back to the to the bad guy what they did. They give him their comeuppance, you know, and technically they're cheating and doing the wrong thing, but, you know, the crowd can understand why, and we're on board. So same thing happened where Wagner was, like, tearing his mask, and then immediately Atlantis grabs him, snapmares him over, and then so dramatically is, like, pulling his mask off. And I just thought that was such a cool visual, just that moment of, like, the good guy getting his, you know, giving the bad guy his medicine.
and getting the crowd to cheer him on doing it.
Yeah.
Which made that.
I also need to tell you, when I was doing that one, that was probably the most tired and in a state that I've ever been of all the matches of the week that I've done. I don't know if you can tell it looking at it. Yeah. I did this one after the opening night of the art show. After we got back to Kaylin's mum's house, I was so drunk after this wrestling club. I'm very thankful to Scratch because they pay for my beers when I do these wrestling clubs, which I'm very, very thankful for. I was like a bit wasted, had a lovely night. I was so tired and I was like, man, I got a whole ass match of the week to do. And there was no part of me where it was an option to just be like, I'll just do it a bit late. You know, to me, I hold myself accountable with this match of the week gimmick. I have to do that.
I definitely respect it.
No matter what, you know.
The commitment to hitting that deadline.
Like you said, when I come down to Melbourne sometimes and I'll arrive late and then I have to be like, all right, it's like I've just caught a long flight and I'm tired, but I have to get this match done.
And starting at 12 o'clock at night, it's the last thing I could be doing. I could have the energy to do.
I think I started this one at 12:30. Yeah. Again, was quite drunk, so tired. I was like, just... At least I knew the moment because I'd sort of had the reference that I'd remembered, all right, this is what I'm going to do. So I did it all start to finish the early hours of that morning. And man, this is one of the ones where I can see sort of the
little imperfections.
Yeah, I try to lean into that generally when it comes to my art. I think it's the rough around the edges side of things that makes it feel human.
Yeah, I can definitely say that.
And, you know, a long time ago was my art, I think I realized I'm not the kind of guy where everything's just going to be perfect. And the more that I try to make it perfect, the worse it looks.
Yeah.
So if I lean into the imperfection element of it, that's better for me. So that's 100%. What this is. This is as imperfect as it gets. But I think in saying that, it's got it captures a feeling of it's got some heart to it.
It has parts of you in it.
Yeah, and it's sort of got the moment is quite a rapid action kind of shot that sort of the urgency with which I was drawing it kind of brings that out as well.
Trying to get it done so you can go to sleep before it's sunrise.
Yeah, basically. it's a little bit janky, as Kaylin would say. And I'm kind of embracing that, and I think that's kind of like me as a person, you know, just a little bit janky.
Yeah, you gotta embrace it.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Makes you different.
But
and special.
Thank you. But I can't say enough good things about this match. I was talking to Brad the other day, you know, good friend of the show, previous guest as well, about this one. Brad makes no bones about Lucha not being his favorite style of wrestling in the world. I think that's the one he just sort of it's not really for him most of the time.
Yeah.
He wasn't able to make it to that last wrestling club, the All Lucha one, which I was telling him. I was like, that would have been good for you to come along to because you would have seen all the different varieties of different styles of Lucha, different presentations of it, everything like that. Like, I swear there's something about Lucha for anyone to love. And it's just picking your flavor, you know. But
it's this match is my true to me what I enjoy most about it.
Yeah,
this one was the perfect example of it.
Yeah, and I think that can be said for a lot of people. So that's why I was telling Brad, I was like, man, I think even if you generally don't like Lucha, I think you should watch this match because this match to me,
back on that one.
Captures so much of the magic of it that it's like. For me, it's impossible to not like this match.
The interaction with the crowd, it's like at another level. And the whole presentation to me is just perfect.
Yeah.
It's just, if you're going to give it a go, this is the match I'd give it a go on.
The atmosphere too, like those bullhorns with the crowd. There's that weird bell things that they're ringing. There's a whole section at this point in CMLL where for some reason a bunch of the fans are behind chicken wire. I don't know whether they've paid the cheap tickets and they're the real rough fans, so we have to I don't know. There used to be a whole legit Rudo section in the crowd at this era of CMLL, which I used to love, and they used to have a drum and they used to beat it to cheer on the Rudos. Oh man, I have so much love for this era of CMLL, man. But yeah, there's just the vibes. Like, it's such a atmosphere to it. And even love the way they used to have the entrance kind of set up back in that era. Like, quite similar still in the grand scheme of things, but yeah.
I did prefer that setup to what they have now.
Things have just gotten a lot more LED board to an extent these days.
I prefer a bit more of the subtle than the in-your-face. Yeah, LED over-the-top lights. Although it has its place. It's just...
The other thing that's like amazing about this, we were talking about the music in this era, all completely unlicensed music that no one is paying any rights for. And they're just airing on TV as well, which is also great. Then you compare it now, and I think thanks to them airing it on YouTube, they couldn't get away with doing the unlicensed thing anymore. So now pretty well everyone's music is sort of like generic stock music, which is a bit of a bummer. Or you have like sort of like ones where they've clearly done sort of like a bad cover job of certain songs. But yeah, there's something about that music that I think really adds to the specialness of the era.
Oh, 100% it does. It brings more emotion for me.
Yeah.
Especially when you already know that song or something like that song, it just makes it that much bigger.
Yeah. That's a beautiful world. I hope that from the enthusiasm of how we're talking about this, that we can get some more people into Lucha, you know? Mm. It's just nothing to not like.
I totally agree.
But yeah, I really recommend, if anyone hasn't watched this match, give it a watch. It's perfect.
I'm in total agreement on that.
And when I watched it for the third time today in preparation, I enjoyed it maybe even more. Like, just so great. And also, on that note, finishing up here, I think pretty cool that, speaking of Dr. Wagner Jr., we got some very good news about Hijo del Dr. Wagner Jr. yesterday, which is quite current here. So... Iodol Dr. Wagner Jr. finished up his NOAH contract, and there's a lot of talk of where he's going to go, and a lot of talk of whether he's going to go to the world of American wrestling, whether he's going to go to WWE, and people were talking about he would have to like drop the mask, which crazy. How on earth would anyone see Dr. Wagner Jr. or Iodol Dr. Wagner Jr. and be like, you know what we need to do? We need to get rid of that mask. That's what's stopping him from being a real superstar.
It's the coolest looking Mexican type Aztec theme mask.
Mayan kind of.
Over time, he's perfected it from where I saw him probably 4 or 5 years ago to where he's at now. It's just on a whole new level.
Mm.
Over time, he did slight little adjustments here and there to the point where it's like he looks like a top guy.
Absolutely tremendous luchador. His in-ring improved so much over that time from that. I think back to that that tag league that he did for Noah with Rene Dupree. Leaps and bounds he's made since then.
So I reckon that was the start of when he started to elevate.
Yeah.
Then even that little bit before then, like you saw the progression and then it just went to a new level when he made his return.
Yeah, for sure. And he really... I mean, they won that tag league, I think.
I don't know if they had that much of a title run because of COVID.
Yeah, I think someone couldn't make it over, or one of them got sick or something and they had to... I don't think they ever actually dropped the belts.
No.
I think they won the tag titles and then had to...
I don't think they ever wrestled again
as
a team.
Because I know Rene Dupree kind of like quickly disappeared from the company thereafter. Which was curiously around the same time that Elgin disappeared. So, you know, we heard the rumors of like there being some sort of like fired or whatever it was. I know some people were saying that Elgin stole protein powder or some nonsense, but I reckon it would make sense to me. And again, this is just us spitballing here.
I completely forgot about Michael Elgin.
Because both of them kind of disappeared from the company at the same time. I reckon they got in a bit of a biff and Noel was like, all right, you're both done here.
Like, I don't think I ever remember seeing the name since then. Maybe did Elgin have a small teen run for like a month or two?
I don't know. I think Galgan probably not the most popular dude.
Oh, definitely
that. Oh, man. But, yeah, I don't know how we got to that. But I was trying to say that I'm very happy about Iodel Dr. Wagner Jr. because we had the news that, look, so he's signed with the Lucha Libre AAA. Mm. And AAA, not necessarily my favorite wrestling product. we'll say that. You know, I'm much more of a CMLL kind of guy, but I am honestly just so happy that he stuck it out. He's returned to Mexican wrestling. Stay true to himself, staying with the mask, representing that family lineage. And I'm actually really excited about what he might be doing. I think he's going to, him being, hopefully he's in a main position there, but I think can only like lift up that product tenfold.
100%. He can only make it better.
I would love to see him continue the family feud between, you know, because it was Psycho Clown who won his father's mask.
Demasked the father.
So the idea of getting to see EO Del Dr. Wagner Jr. against Psycho Clown,
so
I think
it'd
be tremendous.
Same Psycho Clown?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm.
How old would he be now?
I'm not sure, to be honest. Probably maybe, I don't know, mid-30s or so,
okay,
if I had to guess. But the son of Super Porky there is Psycho Clown. And, yeah, I mean, they actually had a match in Noah, didn't they? Didn't Psycho Clown come over?
I actually remember seeing maybe one or two matches he had. He may have had more of a run, but my staying current on a lot of things is a losing battle.
Yeah, trying to keep up with any wrestling product, like all of it is just a lot these days.
Which I haven't with anything.
I'm back in like April of 2024 in Noah right now.
I'm in March.
At some point we say you got to cut bait and just like get caught up, but then you end up missing out on so much
some
beautiful
matches,
stuff.
Yeah. And that's the biggest problem.
I'm almost up to that that Suzuki Keno match. Which I heard very, very good things about. So very enthused about that.
I don't expect good things from those two in the ring together.
You don't?
I only suspect good things.
Yes, rightfully so.
I don't know how it could be a bad match for those two in the ring together.
Exactly. Yeah, very, very good stuff on the horizon, but I just wanted to say very happy for Iro Del Dr. Wagner Jr., who was in my first ever match of the week. That was Iro Del Dr. Wagner against Hideki Suzuki, that national title match from back in the day. I still think of that match very, very fondly.
You do love some Hideki.
Absolutely.
More than anyone else.
But very, very happy to see that our boy has not, you know, gone to the land of American wrestling and, you know,
it's
just given up his mask. Yeah. And
given up his identity.
Yeah. I never understand that.
I don't for the money. Especially.
And well, I mean, the thing is, when you lose your mask, you're generally doing it for a big payday, so you are doing it for money in a sense.
I can respect it in the true Mexican style, and I just not in the going to an American television product.
Hmm.
But that's just me.
You remember the thing with Averno?
No, you'd. Yeah, refresh my memory there, Christopher.
He, I'm pretty sure, was going to go to WWE to be a big opponent of Mystico. Because, you know, he was always one of Mystico's greatest opponents in CMLL. And I think, you know, they were having a pretty hard go at the time of having, you know, their current crop of fine wrestlers that work there, being able to work lucha style and to be any sort of a you know, good base for Mystico. So there was talk of them bringing in, I think they were pretty close to signing Averno to bring him in to work with Mystico. And then he actually ended up dropping his mask in CMLL in preparation for that. I'm assuming probably for a lot less money than he would have otherwise, because Averno is one of the all-time most badass masks and rudos in lucha history.
Took a bit less because he thought a big contract was coming from WWE.
And it never did.
Yeah.
last minute was cancelled out, and then he's just been without the mask ever since. But it happens.
That'd be a fucking brutal way to go.
It's not as bad. I always thought the worst one was the Del Rio one, because he never even lost the mask as Dos Caras Jr.
Oh, so he just signs. I never really saw him wrestling, except he just went straight to WWE.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't drop the mask for the big payday.
Mm-hmm.
And then completely got his name tarnished because of what kind of person he suspected he was.
Well, I mean, I think the main thing was they basically were like, hey, we're going to give you the gimmick of basically being like the Mexican version of Ted DiBiase kind of thing, you know? So it's getting a massive push. Mm. So I guess he made the call of like, all right, well, I'm just going to do this and, you know, give up that payday.
I guess he technically did get a push to a point.
He got a pretty massive push there early on.
And then everything else came to play.
Yeah. Yep. And then now he's in the main event of AAA these days. Oh, boy. There you go. There you go. Look, all the roundabout chats here on this episode. Mm. I think this was a pretty fun one. We talked some match of the week. We talked some art. We talked all sorts of other nonsense. Mm. I think this is a real quintessential Wrestling Art with Chris Things podcast. Mm. Well, I think that brings us to an end here. I'd like to say a big thank you to Ben for joining us on today's episode.
Not a problem, Chris. Always have fun.
I always enjoy when I get to do this in person. I think it's very rare when I do. Mm. You know, we've done a little bit in person before. I did the in-person chat with Jonathan McBurney last year in the art gallery that he had a show in. It was very cool. Yeah, it was a real fun chat, actually.
Should
we run a video? Maybe. We'll work our way up to getting the video for this thing.
I'll never be on a video, but I'd love to see one of those, especially an art studio setup. That'd have been perfect.
Yeah, it was actually super cool. But yeah, I really love getting to do this in-person kind of chats. It has a little bit different level. Mm. Sometimes, you know, when you do it online, it's just like you're a bit removed from the personable kind of element.
Especially when you watch the matches again with each other.
Mm.
And just take little things from it to then add on as you talk about it.
Yeah.
And why you chose certain things.
Little things come back. Yeah. No, I thought it was good. Hope you guys enjoyed. I'd like to say a big thank you to you, everyone who actually voluntarily listens to this thing. Blows my mind, but I'm very appreciative. So thank you so much. If you get some sort of enjoyment out of this rambling nonsense, then that puts a big smile on my face. I want to say a big thank you to Social Suplex, a great team over at socialsuplex.com for keeping this show afloat, for, you know, giving me a platform to spurt my nonsense. I get some, not the biggest, but I get a modicum amount of advertising dollars from time to time over there.
Nice.
That buys me some coffees, keeps me
that's
alert.
All it needs to do.
Exactly. It's far more than I ever expected out of doing this thing. I always have a lot of love for Social Suplex. Make sure if you feel like some more wrestling audio, to check out a bunch of the stuff over there, from One Nation Radio to Keeping It Strong Style, a tremendous New Japan podcast with an extra special friend of the show, the young boy Josh Smith. Recently married young boy Josh Smith. I got a little photo of him and his his bride. Beautiful bride on our fridge here. He sent that to me in the mail.
Look very happy together.
Yeah. I was very happy to speak to Josh a couple episodes ago. If you haven't checked that one out, give it a listen. We have a great little talk about those great couple matches from the big New Japan Wrestle Kingdom show and Wrestle Dynasty from earlier in the year. But yeah, all sorts of stuff from the Trish and Sarah podcast to Imp's WWE Adventure, Tunnel Talk. We've got an AEW match recommendation podcast on there, I'm pretty sure. More prepared people would be looking at a list of this stuff. I'm just scraping the real, you know, back parts of my brain. But
I'm very impressed, though.
I think we got most of them.
You've been pretty smooth about getting those those podcast titles out.
I get a little bit of practice doing this every week. Why would I? I don't know. But yeah, that brings us to a close. If you would like to check out more of the Chris things, that being, you know, art prints of these matches of the week that we're talking about, calendars, you know, t-shirts, the book. We've got that latest match of the week, year one book. That is out. All of that at christhings.com.au. Jump on there. There might even be some original paintings on there if you're of that persuasion. And I also do commissions, as mentioned earlier. Very, very happy to be jumping back into that. And I'm so, so grateful to all of my wonderful commission clients out there who, you know, pay me money to make the art. That's the dream, really. That's where it's at. I'm very grateful to get to do this thing. And in closing off, I'll give you a little bit of a sneaky heads up here. I think that that AEW Way of the Blade book is coming out in the near future. I hear maybe February even, which it's the 13th of February, and I'm still waiting to hear things. But at the same time, I'm expecting that pre-order to be up very soon. So I'll be very excited to have everyone finally check out these illustrations that I did for the early years of AEW that were very close to my heart. Some absolutely wonderful bloody wrestling matches that happened in the formative years of that company. Some matches I really enjoyed going through and making illustrations of. And I can't wait to read Phil's write-ups of all of the matches again. So I think there's a really cool way to do the Way of the Blade sequel. So I'll keep you all abreast of that. If you always be following me at Chris Things on Instagram, you'll have the skinny on all of it. But I think that brings us to a close. Thank you very much, and I'll see you next week. Bye.
Bye.
Fun little time there.
Definitely. Hopefully I wasn't too far away from more.
Hopefully not. Oh well.
There are some things you wouldn't mind being stuck with, like a large unexpected inheritance. An always on the verge of death phone that has to be plugged in just right so it charges is not one of those things. Switch to Verizon and we'll pay off your old phone. Up to $800 via prepaid MasterCard so you can get a new one. Just trade in any phone from our top brands on any unlimited plan. With new line on my plan. Additional terms apply for trade-in and pay off your phone offer. See Verizon.com for details.